Chapter 7. Are you willing to live in a new way that's not all about you and your previous fucked up stuff? You have to. Step 7. We humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Step 7 is about humility. It's about accepting the limits of our model of reality. It is about accepting what we are and embracing what we could become. Foucault would tell you, if he were here and you could get him to cooperate, that the very notion of an inner connection to a divine being is a social and linguistic construct that we need to abandon, and that we invent ourselves rather than discovering ourselves. I disagree with Michel here, mostly on the basis of my personal experience with distinct and seemingly transcendent aspects of my own consciousness, and not only while off my nut on drugs. I accept that there are limitations to the capacity of this recital, but I invite you, implore you even, to consider that your model of reality, if painful, is in need of improvement, and the humility and faith that are components of this way will set you free. A modern view of prayer could be an earnest attempt to commune with the aspect of your consciousness that is untainted by learned thought patterns or fluctuations caused by biochemical impulse. Can we tend towards that? The experience of jealousy, the experience of envy or rage, can we reach through the fear to the crucible of self which is experiencing sensation and thought and ask that we transcend our baser wants? We know, don't we, that little is achieved through constant self-centeredness. We know, too, that it is objectively ridiculous to obsess about our own wants and desires. Humility is the acknowledgement of our relative insignificance, our insignificance when compared to the infinite, or even all the other people currently alive. Not that we are without value, no, we are infinitely valuable insomuch as we are part of the infinite. Our personal drives and wants, though, are either automated biological impulses or neurotic tics and quirks that we have unconsciously subscribed to. If I believe that I can only be happy if I'm in a particular relationship and the other person doesn't seem to be interested or doesn't conform to the way I believe they should behave, it is, in the scheme of things, unimportant. And if I allow my feelings about the situation to bleed into all other areas of my life, work, child-rearing and friendships, this is an indication that I am being self-centered and have lost my humility. There is sadness in the world. There is disappointment. All that is in the material world will transpire. The sun itself, let alone our planet, will one day implode, and when it does, it will be a day like this one. A moment, a time, if time exists on a galactic level like this one. So from that perspective, my romantic concerns are quite minor. My esteem, then, ought to be derived from the fact that I am part of this great play, and if I can cleanse myself of acquired mental habits and redundant or detrimental biological drives, I can live in the service of a positive and creative force. The rather Christian-sounding prayer for Step 7, given that the program was constructed in the USA in the 30s, is unsurprisingly in the appropriate vernacular and reads, "My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I now pray that you remove every single defect of character that stands between me and my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding." My Creator is relatively modern, at least it isn't gender-specific or a loaded word like master. The term My Creator can easily apply to whatever great mystery you conceive of that is driving evolution and universal expansion. I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. Here, the willingness is key. We are no longer saying, "This is just the way I am," or "What's wrong with being self-centered?" Having reviewed our inventory, we have decided we want to eliminate our defective characteristics, our patterns that generated personal and general misery. We acknowledge here that we have positive attributes, that we are capable of kindness and love. We're not total shitbags. I like the way this prayer suggests a higher proprietor, a surrender to a higher way. The Hindu deity Ganesh is known as the remover of obstacles. I often envisage my jealousy or self-righteousness being removed by this Ganesh force to allow the clear and undiminished light to radiate. The word Islam, of course, means surrender. In this context, we surrender our selfish former habits in faith that beyond them, with the channel clear, a higher power will transmit. I now pray that you remove every single defect of character that stands between me and my usefulness to you and my fellows. This is the explicit expression of a higher goal. We no longer operate on the mundial level of self-fulfillment like cattle. We pledge to be useful. It is utilitarianism that we are guided by. We prepare ourselves for service. Instead of my only goal in life being the fulfillment of my own picayune needs, I make myself available to a higher purpose. To this force, as I conceive it and experience it, and practically, other people. How can I be useful to other people? Now there's a concept in 2017. Help others. Do something that's not for you. Maybe not even for someone you know. Being kind to my girlfriend is like cleaning my teeth or flushing the toilet. It's good that I do it, but if I don't, I'll suffer. My partnership is the relationship that I tangibly live in. If I start being kind to people I don't know, from whom I cannot derive benefit, now that's advanced. And to take it to black belt levels, try doing kind things and then not telling anybody about it. Maybe in the next life. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Here the prayer reveals its petition. We want strength, but only so we can be useful, not so that we can win the X Factor or run a juice bar, unless we are certain that this is what the higher power wants for us. A good way to find out the will of your higher power is to ask someone else, someone you trust, who has a program. When I say this prayer, at the go out from here, I imagine here to be my heart, and that I will try to live my life and do my work from my heart. Step 7 is a powerful step, and one I work continuously. Of course I slip up on a daily basis. Mid-interaction I think, hang on, I'm being totally selfish here. But I only have this awareness because I work this program. I have a template. And because I've worked step 6, I am willing to change. I have admitted that selfishness and lust do not work for me. So if I find myself lying to get what I want or staring at someone as if they had no purpose in this world but to give me pleasure and escape, I can see that I am now off track. The prayer is an agreement with the self that you would like to be. With this program, at any time you find yourself going off track, moving away from the person you would like to be, the person you were intended to be before malevolent thinking and behavior and habits took hold, you can use this formula to guide you home. When I say the Step 7 prayer, I call to mind what I know of evolutionary theory, the unknowable beauty of the universe's inception, the slow dawning of our planet, the birth of chemistry and biology, the mysterious forces that either drive, facilitate, or allow this process. The emergence of cellular life, its crescendo over millions of years to self-conscious life, life that is capable of contemplating its own creation. I consider this when I say my Creator. I also consider the part of my own being that has sat in witness to the events of my life so far. The part of me that has observed the chaos and yearning somehow unimpaired, my Creator. The rest of the prayer, even if prayer to you is no more than having a word with yourself, is a fine appeal to offer. I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I like the acknowledgement of the good and bad. I like the humility of placing my life in a context that exceeds the pursuit of my own petty, trivial desires. As Adam Curtis says, we have been taught that freedom is the freedom to pursue our petty, trivial desires. Real freedom is freedom from our petty, trivial desires. I sense there is true freedom here, even if I am afraid. When at Amma's ashram in Kerala, southern India, a Swami said to me, "The world has nothing else to give you now, Russell. It can only take from you." I felt a chill, like the game is up. He was right. After he said that, I continued to try to use the world to my advantage. Prestige, power, appearances, all to no avail, always left with an anxious deficit in my belly. I hardly need tell you that I still err daily, but now at least I have sound ideals to which I am willing to aim. What use am I to this all-encompassing entity or the earth's people if I am rife with defects? Little. The second part of this beautiful consciousness hack asks that we be useful to God and our fellows. A useful tool for me each day, then, this prayer, in possession as I am of a mind that reverts to selfish aims. If I think, how can I be useful to the man serving me coffee, or to any and each of the people I encounter over a day, my experience of reality is enhanced. Finally, grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. I always envisage going out from my heart lovingly, kindly, and then witness if the vow can withstand London traffic. In short, be willing to be a different person rather than Russell Mark I, who ultimately would sacrifice anything to see his needs fulfilled. Humility, then, is to acknowledge one's relative insignificance, not worthlessness. We are valuable but through our connection to the whole, not the mental and material acquisitions achieved through the agency of ego. When you're recognizable, privacy becomes a commodity. I've escaped from the glamour and nausea I sought to live in comfortable domesticity. On the river at night I am free on glistening silence, and I see my girlfriend in the darkness as she is an independent entity that shares life with me. In the day, the shameful day, the river is Christmas busy. The river has locks. Locks are a feat of engineering, managing the flow of water, preventing flood, but subtler forces of nature escape their punctuation. I am shy and bob about in a rowboat, making small talk across the bows and big judgments in my swollen mind. In the ordinary moment, the melodrama surges and plunges, the thoughts torrential and tyrannical, worrying and judging, ever protecting the raw, bare boy who's in there parentless, unbounded. So sloshing about in the lock with wet ropes and maritime incompetence, we are vulnerable to a sudden paparazzi. Laura is pregnant and exposed. Adjacent to the river, post-lock, there is some kind of fun run happening, and in the midst of this the pap snaps further. Laura, though far from a hit-him-Wayne-type girlfriend, in her pregnant and vulnerable state, expresses irritation and we razz each other up into action, meaning I pootle over to the riverbank, wade out, join the fun run at a jog, and not in the fun spirit that the organisers intended. I mean, I'm fuming. As far as I'm concerned, it's a rage run. I'm careful to conserve breath because I'm keen not to waddle up to the pudgy pap all wheezy, as I know deep down that I'm on the brink of my patented and all too frequent, even if there has only been a handful, Ray Winston, confrontation tone. Slowing down, I place an angry hand on his shoulder like an avid Daily Mail reader, citizens arresting a Maddie suspect. Get any good shots, mate? I purr menacingly. This overt and theatrical rendering of our contemporary working-class masculinity, an attempt to parent the raw, bare boy in the lock. A programme is being worked, an unconscious programme. We do not choose between programme and no programme. We choose between conscious programme and the unconscious programme that operates us by default. By working through my step 4, the thorough and fearless inventory, and the subsequent fear inventory, a more specific itinerary of the fears that underscore my defective actions, I have identified components of the code that make up my unconscious default program, that 1. I am afraid to die, 2. I am afraid that I can't take care of myself, and 3. I am afraid that I cannot trust anyone. In this scenario, core fear number two is at work. I am afraid that I cannot take care of myself, therefore I have to counter that belief with a contrary action. In this case, acting all tough, when a more sensible course of action would obviously have been to ignore the provocation. So the external stimulant of the threatening pap engages in a live connection with my inner fear that I can't take care of myself, and in this moment I have no strategy to override this inner and outer negative circuit. I have lost myself. None of us can adequately control the meteorology of other people. They're nice, they're nasty, they come, they go. We have no choice but to address, alter, and amend the inner coordinate if we want to have a different model of reality, if we want to have more choices. Hot and bothered, I say to the pap, delete the photos. My unstated plan is to get his camera and lob it in the river, even though it's strapped onto him like Rambo's rifle. I settle for snatching his spectacles to barter for the film or whatever passes for film in the post-digital world. At this point, my connection to the source is gone. I'm not consciously trying to be a good man. On the contrary, I am a connoisseur of my own malevolent feelings, relishing like a vampire my cold contempt of the porcine voyeur. When some of the jaunty passing fun runners pause to ask me for a selfie, I make much of obliging like some garrulous John Candy character, all hugs and smiles to emphasize to old Porky that the Ray Winston act is just one roll in my locker, stocker, and two smoking barrels. It is extremely important that you recognize that the significant activity here took place in the realm of thought. My own negative programming meant that the external event was coloured, filtered, inflected in a manner that made negative outcomes inevitable. What this program can do is give you another option. The nature of the challenges vary, but the number of inner coordinates is limited, perhaps in the same way that most human beings have the same basic organic setup. We all have hearts and kidneys and lungs. My sense is that our inner faculties, our emotional palate, are similarly comparable. Whether you're a gnarled and boisterous apprentice mechanic or a Cambridge don solving conundrums from your high-tech wheelchair, there is in most cases a comparable inner world. If not a basic binary, a universal pantheon of inner deities and demons which in our race to total rationalism we have unwisely discarded. The Greeks knew these gods dwelt not on Olympus, but upon the summits, crags, and slopes within. This inner realm interfaces with external phenomena for good or for ill. This program, like all mythology, is a methodology for management. On this day, I yielded my program to the program that abides when I am not present. After a bit of snarling and handbaggery, I left the pap sand specks and shot off back to Laura. Already the fugue is clearing. Already I'm beginning to see, perhaps because I've acquired a pair of glasses, that my conduct was imprudent. I think I've just been stupid, Laura, I say, wading back to the boat. The pap calls the police. The police know who I am and where I live. This whole scenario is a product of fame and the personality that drove me to seek it. I was out, but Laura was at home with my in-laws, who have already had to roll back fathomless logic to accept me into their hearts, so when the old 5-0 comes a-knocking at the door, it must be hard for them to see me as reformed Russell, man of peace, as opposed to Russell, the junkie, sex addict, prank, phone-calling, troublemaking narcissist. Of course I'm both these characters, and the reality I manifest is hugely improved by adherence to this discipline. If we choose to live in a materialistic perception of this happenstance, I get tangled in the weeds of how come that pap can steal and profit from my image but I can't take his specs, or how come the police even know where I live. I have no choice but to see the event as a symbol in my personal myth, to look for the lessons that it's trying to suggest to me. To do this, I need some basic principles: gratitude and acceptance. I am grateful to my life where I get to show off for a living, and as a consequence of this, I will occasionally be photographed. Now, if I were you, hearing this, determined not to change my Weltanschauung, worldview in German, I'd go, that's easy for you to say. You're loaded and you're on a rowboat on the Thames with your lovely bird. Of course you can accept a modicum of inconvenience. Well, here is my riposte. If you determine your life by external data, there will always be something to complain about. There will always be some facet of reality that is not going as you would like it to. There is always more to be consumed, people more rich and famous than you. To be clear, unless I'm much mistaken, you're not hearing this in a ditch in the slums of Kibera with the barrel of a gun in your mouth while a rabid warlord bums you for his amusement, are you? And yet, that horrific scenario is reality for some people. In fact, half of humanity live in conditions of galling poverty, so any of us that have swerved that nightmare would do well not to spend our leisure time bemoaning the fact that we are not laid out on a yacht with a Kardashian slurping away at our privates, because the sages are right, the material world is an illusion, and its treasures all too temporal. That doesn't mean you have to live as a monk, although that is one way out of it. It just means you can never quench your spiritual craving through material means. Gratitude for where you are and what you have is one important coordinate for retuning our consciousness. Similarly, acceptance. We are where we are supposed to be. From this position, we can grow. With inner resistance comes tumult. I would never propose that you ought to accept injustice or be anything other than all you can possibly be. This step enables us through humble petition to a higher self to experience deep peace and a power that is present and waiting to be unlocked. This is not a moral or economic argument. This is a system for managing your inner life so that you can deal with reality. We crave connection, but so much of the time we are not alive, neutralized. Who are you when you're listening to the radio in traffic? You're not you. You're on standby. Mostly we are free-floating and disengaged, lost in the spectacle. When I fixate on the object of my addiction in any given moment, it is because I believe it will give me relief from disconnection. Even if it will ultimately make things worse, I will feel the connection. This is why addicts relapse, even though they have strong evidence that the action will not be successful. Once they are in the traumatized, cut-off state, they revert to the only plan they know to ameliorate the feeling. Through humility, this step bypasses our erroneous and illusory methods for temporary self-salvation and connects us to the truth we have always sought. We are, in fact, connected. Step 7 exercises. Are you willing to live in a new way that's not all about you and your previous fucked up stuff? You have to. Recovery. This way of life upon which I hope you embark comprises only guidance and power. A friend of mine says, satellite navigation system plus fuel. With the removal of defects, I need to ask to commune with the supreme truth, the unified field, God as I understand God, for a new vision. Then I need to ask for the strength to put this into practice. The steps that follow provide the framework for this transformation. Having become ready to change our shady behavior and thinking in the previous step, we make a decision that seems oddly incremental. We ask for them to be removed. It is a common spiritual dictum that each flaw or sin contains within it an attribute waiting to be realized. Early in my recovery with my first mentor, I came up with a notion based on the 14 character defects as he showed them to me that, even if I do say it myself, perspicaciously foreshadowed this idea. Here are the defects as I then understood them, although now, as you have seen, I use a more exhaustive list. Pride, self-pity, self-centeredness, selfishness, intolerance, impatience, jealousy, envy, lust, sloth, greed, gluttony, arrogance, dishonesty. When humbly asking for our defects to be removed by God, consider what attribute would most usefully replace them. Self-pity, compassion for others. Selfishness, kindness. Self-centeredness, empathy. Intolerance, dishonesty, and impatience are obvious. They're opposites. Lust, love. Greed, generosity. Gluttony, mindfulness. Sloth, diligence. Arrogance, humility. Envy, gratitude. Jealousy, acceptance. Pride, grace. These, like much of this reading, are simply a guide to a different way of thinking. When I am navigated into loving attitudes, my life is a joy to inhabit, which surely is partly the point. Humility is our acknowledgement of our relative insignificance. We are valuable as part of the whole, and we have a right to love and be loved, but we can afford to surrender the egoic authorship that's got us into this pickle. If you are an atheist or agnostic and the idea of asking God to remove defects is a bit mental, but you do want to change, this is how I'd do it. I'd say this out loud. I don't know if there's a supreme being out there in the limitless cosmos. In fact, I don't think there is. I do know that my thinking is limited as it takes place within the context of my own knowledge, which is bounded on all sides by ignorance. I am open to the possibility that beneath my thoughts, my feelings, the invisible field that holds together my material being, are other forces that are likely beyond human comprehension. And the dualistic models and space-time framework through which we understand reality within this limitlessness, all is possible. I, as a limited entity, petition with my awakening, personal consciousness, that which is beyond limits and contained within it, all creativity, all joy, all beauty, and I ask that my life and consciousness can be used as a vessel for these positive powers. Then, if you're super ironic and self-aware, say, Amen. What harm can it do? You may not immediately become perfect. None of us will, whether we believe in a supernatural causeless authority or not. But I predict you and your relationship with external and internal phenomena will improve. Ask yourself, what do I want to change? Am I going to change it? Do I commit to change?